Bring in the smart people. I'm Shane Hewitt, guest host here on the Rush Smart Speakers segment every day at this time, where we bring together many different perspectives and bat a ball about on various topics. Our guests today, Gauratan Singh, VP at Crestview Strategy, community advocate and lawyer. Karen Stintz, former city councillor and TTC's chair, now the president of president and CEO of Variety Village. And Kim Wright, principal and founder of Wright Strategies. Kim, I'm going to start with you today because of jurisdictional conversation in regards to great news, $6 billion housing infrastructure fund from the Prime Minister. I mean, that sounds glorious. But the reality is that the provinces, based on the Prime Minister's statements, have not been called, or at least fired a text message saying, by the way, we're already seeing some provinces respond with jurisdictional questions.
Well, it wouldn't be a day ending in Y if there weren't jurisdictional questions on, well, just about everything, including a school nutrition program and all the rest of it. Look, I come from a school of, let's just start building stuff. Stop doing the finger pointing. Stop doing the, you know, who's in charge of what and who's bigfooting over who. And I find it a bit rich that the province is saying, hey, housing is our jurisdiction, but you should also listen to the cities. I also, the last few weeks, have had to listen to more arguments in from the city of Hamilton, for example, that, well, a parking lot must be staved because it's the heart of our community. And I hear this argument in a lot of places. The premier walking back, should we even build four-story and fourplexes across the province? The answer is yes. The reality is we've got tent cities across this province in places, not just in downtown Toronto, but across the province and across the country, on top of which you can't find a place to live the one-bedroom apartment on a minimum wage job. So we just need to start building, and everyone's got to stop finger-pointing.
I don't think the premier understood the fourplex versus four stories notion. I think that one got tangled in his brain, just to be clear. But to your point, I mean, imagine, Karen, how much we would get done if we invested half the effort into into building and solutions than we do into grandstanding.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the challenge that we have with this announcement, is it actually going to get anything done, or is it just another announcement? And it has the potential to be building infrastructure that's critical to support new housing, but again, if it doesn't get actioned, it's not really worth anything. And as Kim mentioned, you know, we've got to, now more than ever, we've got to figure out how to build things quickly. And you know, the market still isn't to a place where we're able to accommodate everybody who needs a home. And so it's, you know, the proof will be whether or not this announcement actually results in any units getting built or any housing getting built. And it's not clear as things stand now, for lots of reasons, that that's actually going to happen.
Okay. Well, to what Kim had said, you know, the provinces are saying, well, how about you know, get your toe out of our pool? Provinces haven't done a whole lot, you know, other than weird land deals that get themselves in trouble with developer friends. I'm trying to be gentle here and not distract from the topic at hand. But they also haven't done a whole lot either. Gauratan Singh, I mean, the community aspect of your stand is always core of that. That part I've already learned about you. So where do you take this? Saskatchewan has already said, you know, get out of our yard.
Well, I think when we talk about building infrastructure in Canada, every level of government needs to play a very direct role. And we know historically that the federal government has played a really important role in building housing. And so I think there's a little bit of, you know, this kind of opposition to potentially lots of money coming into a community to help address a crisis. It doesn't seem like a correct opposition to have given the current climate. That being said, I do think the greater issue here is, can we actually trust the Liberals to fix an issue that they've had a huge part in playing? They've had 9 years, and now at the, you know, nth hour, we see policy after policy coming forward around housing. And it really does beg the question, why not have these kind of policies earlier? Why not have this kind of action earlier? Instead, when times are at their worst, when people who are making, you know, by all means, a really good salary can't afford a roof over their head or enough to put on the table, it seems like too little too late from the feds. And a lot of it just seems like posturing and getting ready to maybe try to turn around their really terrible polling numbers.
Well, there's that. That's a good point. Kim Wright. Kim, the Ontario government has also responded to saying, well, we have already announced $1.8 billion in funding, blah, blah, blah. I have two questions that maybe somebody on the panel can understand or help me understand what this means. First of all, I am concerned about the one-upsmanship of our dollars, right? There is no government fund. It's your money. And then there's also this, they framed it as lack of house enabling infrastructure. What the heck is lack of house enabling infrastructure? Did we run out of nails?
No, not quite. So whatever goofy, we sat too much in a boardroom to come up with something fancy, we're going to call this. The underlying infrastructure, sewers, water, electricity, piping, roads, all of that. When we start to look at that, the Federation of Canadian Municipalities has pegged the per housing unit cost for each unit of housing to be $107,000. So every time you want to put a shovel in the ground for a new house, service that site is $107,000. So that's what they're trying to get at. Now, the province of Ontario has also taken away development charge abilities from and what we used to call in Toronto Section 37 agreements, which were offsets for heightened density. They took that away and said, well, we'll give it back to you. We'll make you whole on these infrastructure promises. Well, we know that they haven't actually made that whole. And at the end of the day, there's a lot of money that has to get spent on infrastructure if we're going to actually maintain any sort of quality of life in these housing and these developments. That used to be paid for by mostly development charges. It's not now. Now it has to come from somewhere. It has to come from the province or whomever. And the reality is, it's a big chunk of money. But there are all sorts of ways that I see that municipalities and the province and the feds are all getting in the way and trying to one-up each other of it's your fault, it's your fault, we're putting in this money, we're putting in that money. If you think about Toronto City Council or any city councils, I often describe it, it's like that in The Simpsons where you've got that mob with the torches. Mm-hmm. That's what you're dealing with. That's the NIMBYs that come to play. Karen will know this quite well, that when she was first elected and first courted to run for city council, there was an ad put in the paper because they were mad about it, the previous councillor who put up gasp towers in Midtown Toronto. So these groups will always find a way to the politicians and threaten them with election or unelection. And we need to stop placating the NIMBY movement.
Well, Karen, I mean, you have experience inside, right? And so we only have about a minute here, but I did want to get your thoughts. I mean, is this, who do you defend in this? Do you defend your history and your old colleagues, or do you defend, you know, as a citizen?
No, I mean, the challenge that cities are facing is that growth doesn't pay for itself. And there was always this assumption, if you take a parking lot and you stick a tower on it, that the tax revenue and the development charges and everything else will make the city financially sustainable. And in fact, we've learned over 20 years of intensive development in Toronto that that's not the case, that our budget hole is bigger than ever. And so when we talk about this infrastructure fund and enabling building, there are, transit needs to be paid for and it can't get done with property tax. Community centers need to be built, parks need to be built, streets need to be paved, police needs to be hired. And there's a whole bunch of city services and infrastructure that's required to support increase in density that can't be done off the property tax. So I do think there is a role for other levels of government in that, making sure that we can actually absorb the new people, the new houses, and the new density that we want to see.
Now, this is Kim Wright, Karen Stintz, and Gratton Singh. Gratton, we're going to come back to you on our next side as we continue this conversation about where this all does land. I take out of this one important thing, and it seems to be the part that everybody forgets. I know that right now, listening to this conversation, is a guy or a gal who drives a dump truck, who has a framing company, who has a roofing company, maybe a landscaping company, an interior decorator that would love nothing more than to be working, a track co-operator that wants to dig a hole for a pipe, They would love nothing more. What do we say to those people? Because we can talk, all of us, about great ideas, and I appreciate all of them. But what do we say to those people? If we could do something about it, what are we going to do about it? Because there are people that are just happy to get the work done, do the work. We can't even build enough houses across the country to serve this province alone. So what are we going to do about it? What do we say to those people? 416-872-1010, 710-1010. Your texts and stuff are welcome for your thoughts. Smart Speakers on the Rush. Smart Speakers, that's who's here. I'm Shane Hewitt. Our guests include Kim Wright, Karen Stintz, and Gauratin Singh. I made you wait. And perhaps the hardest question of all as we finish up, I do want to button up the conversation about $6 billion of building money in the provinces. Don't know about it yet, by the way. Surprise. And what do you say, though? Gauratin, community is number one for you. What is the what do you say to the Traco operator? What do you say to the framer, the roofer that's just desperate to be working and building more houses? How do you tell them that, yeah, everyone's got this out of control, or can you not do that?
Well, I think the biggest issue we have right now is that right now we know there's a housing crisis and that people have not had the, they don't have the dignity right now to live in. Many people are struggling to find any sort of housing, and because of the expense of it, it's you know, a huge line item in their personal expenses. But my answer would be to those who are working to build our province, to build our nation, to build the housing and infrastructure that we need, is that your work is not needed now more than ever. Like, I think of all the strong unions across our country, private sector unions, who are doing so much to build this kind of infrastructure. Yes, their work is needed now more than ever. But when it comes to really trusting those who are making these actions, I don't know if I can trust the Liberal government right now. I don't know if I looked at their track record over the past 9 years and to see how poorly things have been managed. I don't think they have the answers. I don't think the Conservatives have the answers either. That being said, and so to me, I think we need to think for different alternatives, and we need to think about building sustainable housing, cooperative housing, and housing that people can have the dignity to afford to obtain.
All right, there we go. Gauratin Singh. I'm Shane Hewitt. Smart Speakers. Okay, bidding wars is a thing we've chatted about here on The Rush, that not only is there bidding wars, but advance payments for houses. Karen, I find it really fishy. Is it okay? I'm a free market person, but this is fishy to me. Is it okay to offer up a prepay of all of the rent?
No, not at all. Not at all. That's ridiculous. I mean, who can afford to do that? And, well, you know, I know can. It is, I guess somebody can because they're doing it. But, you know, that's this kind of thing. You know, again, I don't normally advocate for governments to step in and do things. I tend to think that they should stick to their knitting, and I'm not a big advocate of rent control. But I do think that there needs to be some, in this market of scarcity, there needs to be some protection for people so that they can actually have a chance at finding an apartment and place to live that's somewhat affordable. Because, you know what, I don't want my kids living in my basement. I love my kids.
Yeah, and that's
they're 20 and 18, and I want them out. Get
it? Kids, it's time for Mama to have another season of life here. But Kim, you need a credit check for most things in life. But if you can have the cash payment, take a wild guess. Well, we'll overlook the credit check. I mean, this is very scammy and as shady gray area as it gets to me.
The worst part about it is that there is no guarantees, even if you have prepaid all of it, right? They'll still find a way with rent evictions and all the rest of it. All of these stories that you're hearing, these horror stories, the bully offers of, here, I will just pay you the whole thing in cash, just give me this apartment. And even that doesn't work all the time. And I've talked to friends who have tried to do that as a way to get an apartment. I'll tell you that the bidding war was so substantial on a place that I lived in. Thank goodness the person who was the owner of my unit was like, oh, she's okay. I've seen her on TV. What kind of world is that where we're at? But that's where we are. Bidding wars, rent hikes, promises of your firstborn child, and, you know, all of the rest of it. That's where we're getting to. And when you think about all these condo towers, people say, oh, well, they're condo towers, those are all just people living in them. You know, I can tell you most buildings are probably 70 to 85% rental stock, even though they're called condos. So we do need to start building. We need to start building often. And, you know, again, going back to the premier going, oh, don't know about those four-story buildings. I mean, the reality is there's lots of places where we can build and we should build and we shouldn't be afraid to build. I'm not saying that a 70-story tower is good for every neighborhood, but I can tell you that there's a lot of neighborhoods in the city that don't have anything more than single family homes, and they need you. You're either going to grow up as a building or as a community, or you're going to grow out.
Right.
And those are your two options.
Okay, quick hits on this one. Let's try this and just hit it quickly. Gauratan Singh, the Liberals are standing by Han Dong's nomination race. Not that Han Dong shouldn't be there, but they're basically saying it was secure, it was safe, no outside influence. Go.
So I think there are huge red flags with this nomination race. We're talking about international students being bussed over to vote in this. And I think across the board, to me, what it demonstrates is that we have an issue of foreign interference in Canada. We know that India, Russia, China, Iran are some of the nations that are interfering in a negative way to our democracy and our institutions. And we need to do more to fight back against these incursions into our sovereignty and into our integrity as a nation.
Quick hit, Karen Stitz.
Well, I think it just shows Liberals really aren't that interested in whether it's election interference and foreign interference. And, you know, they were slow to call the inquiry, slow to participate, quick to try to shut it down. And so, you know, I think that this is something, again, that for the record, I mean, they're not that interested in being concerned about an issue that is clearly an issue of national security. And I think it's shameful.
Kim Wright, quick hit on the Liberals saying that they're okay with Han Dong's nomination race. Not an indictment on Han Dong, but just that the actual process was secure from outside interference.
It wasn't secure, but it is typical Liberal practice, and we've known this for a generation, that busloads of international students, seniors who are residents, will show up at nomination meetings, and more terrifying, they will show up to polling stations, overwhelm a polling station, and then have frankly swayed elections. So this is not a new practice. I'm just shocked the Liberals are finally admitting it.
Okay. Naivety is a beautiful thing in life. Naivety is not okay to hide behind when you're talking about the security of our country. I'm stepping in on that one because that's what's happening here. Okay, as we roll up to the top of the hour here, the big question that we're going to get to next has got to be a quick answer. Gauratan, this is not politics. What is your custom order secret menu hack that you have to admit, guilty pleasure or not, 30 seconds or less when you go through a drive-thru or to a restaurant? Go.
I'm like the worst guy to ask. I'm a vegetarian. I'm a eat your organic food kind of guy. So I have nothing to say, man. I rarely eat fast food, if ever. I know that makes you sound like kind of pretentious, but I just don't.
That's all right. That's all right. That's cool. I appreciate the honesty. Okay, Karen, what is the secret order?
You know what? I'm a Big Mac purist. Don't mess with the Big Mac. I think it just stands on its own.
I'm a quarter pounder with cheese, only pickles, must be. And don't put anything else on it. Just give me the cheese and the pickles and the meat. Kim Wright.
Look, Starbucks always has fun ones. There's the Barbie Frappuccino and there was a unicorn one. But the funniest of all was that somebody used the secret menu at a drive-thru in Chicago in the early 90s. And it turned out that that was how some of the guys were putting drugs through. And it got caught out because somebody asked for the Happy Meal without a toy. And it turned out it was a cop and got the drug money and not our drugs and not the actual Happy Meal without the toy.
I didn't even know that was a thing. But now I do. So thank you very much for the inside drug activity, Kim Wright. That's very good. Karen Stintz, thanks for being here as well. Gauratan Singh, I appreciate all of you for being a part of Smart Speakers.
Thanks, Shane.
I'm Shane Hewitt. Okay, the reason why we're asking about food right now, aside from the fact that 'tis the time to feed the belly, is that secret menu items have been challenged. What ones are good? What ones are bad? And can you actually do them? This, my friends, is the research you've been searching for, and it's coming up next on The Rush.